Presserville business editor on today's topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Well, welcome, everyone. Thanks for being here, for braving the elements. I got stuck behind a semi for about 8 miles on 295, so if I'm a little pale, that's why. About 16 years ago, I began focusing exclusively on business reporting, and at that time, nearly every CEO or small business owner I spoke to was flipping out about healthcare costs. That was the big issue back then. And then for several years, healthcare and energy costs kind of traded the top spot for things that would keep CEOs and business owners up at night. But now, far and away, it is workforce development. It is the only thing I hear people talking about, no matter where I go in the state. You may have seen on Friday, the Maine Department of Labor pushed out the September unemployment rate. It was 2.9%. Maine is closing in on 4 years, almost 48 consecutive months of having unemployment below 4%. You talk to any economist in the country, they'll tell you 4% unemployment means fully employed. That's it. Everybody's got a job who wants a job. In the same press release, the DOL said there are 19,700 people who are looking for work and don't have a job. And it struck me that, wow, because if you've been paying attention, you'll know some of the state's biggest employers are really ramping up right now, like BIW already hired 1,000 new employees, and they're trying to hire 1,000 more before the end of the year. Okay, there's 19,000 available. They want 1,000. If Covetrus, the animal technology company, if they get their act together, they're hoping to hire 1,200. WEX wants 600. So there are some big employers in this state that are looking to do some massive hires. So kind of where does that leave everybody else? And so it's been interesting to see how some businesses have reacted to that over the last few years. Some of the tech companies in Portland, they chartered a bus and went down to Boston a couple of years ago, and they just kind of cold called students who are hanging out in Cambridge. Northeastern, Harvard, MIT, they need kids who have degrees in computer science and electrical engineering, and they just thought this would be a way to try to meet people and recruit them to Maine. Other companies like Maine Health they've initiated a program where they have been targeting immigrants who have healthcare experience in their native countries, but they don't have the credentials and the certification to work here. So they've launched a few accelerated training programs identifying that particular group. I'm sure Charlie will talk a little about the credentialing and the certificate programs that the community college system offers. Other folks, like some innovative York County hospitality folks, have decided that a way to help with their seasonal employment is to go and try to recruit elderly folks, retirees. And they've been really successful about that with that program, something that Laura is going to talk about. And others have looked at things like apprenticeship programs, internships, and I think that Veronica from Arundel Machine will talk specifically about that. And then others have just, you know, they're just sort of flying blind. They're trying everything they possibly can. There are some new programs to hire folks who've just come out of incarceration. There are some programs to help with folks who are non-traditional in some way when you think about when you're hiring. And so everybody is looking for answers. And luckily, we have three people today who are going to share some tips and some strategies. Hopefully, you'll be able to take something away that will help you if you're dealing with these workforce issues, too. So our format, this is really casual. We have a conversation. I sent some questions to our panelists earlier to kind of get the ball rolling. And we'll have 15 minutes at the end for questions from the audience. Some of you folks already submitted questions when you registered for this event, and so we'll get to those also as best we can. So with that, let me introduce our panel. To my immediate left is Charlie Collins. He's the Deputy Executive Director of Workforce Training in the Maine Community College System. And Charlie has spent almost his entire career trying to align higher education opportunities with workforce opportunities. He has not only done that at the Maine Community College system, but previously at Husson College. So he's got a wealth of experience. He's going to also help us know what are employers looking for and what are potential employees looking for. Next to Charlie is Laura. Is it Dolce? Is it Italian?
It's Italian.
Dolce. She is the executive director of the Kennebunkport and Arundel Chamber of Commerce. I'm sure she's known to many of the folks here. She's been at that job for almost 5 years and previously held a career in journalism. Yay. She also recently helped spearhead a successful program to attract older workers out of retirement and place them in jobs within Coastal Maine's burgeoning hospitality industry. So really, that's been a great model. We wrote about that last year, and so I'm hoping that there'll be an update and that it's continuing to be successful. And then next to Laura is Veronica Stover. She's the HR director of Arundel Machine. She's been there since 2004. And she, in addition to doing all the, you know, traditional things that an HR director does, like get the new hires on board and make sure everybody signs up for the appropriate benefits and things, she's been overseeing an apprenticeship program, but also has been working for a company that really puts a premium on investing in their workers, and I think that's something that will be interesting for people to hear. And if you didn't know, Arundel Machine does things like it makes airplane parts that were essential when Sully landed his big plane on the Hudson River, and they make parts for nuclear submarines and all kinds of interesting things. So welcome to our panelists.
Thank you. Well,
let's get the ball rolling here. So some Southern Maine employers have had a great experience with interns or apprentices and others targeting older or non-traditional workers. Can you talk a little about your successes and misses with respect to attracting workers? So Charlie, why don't you grab that one first?
Okay. So with regard to apprentices, it is something that, you know, goes back to really the history of our country. I mean, this is not a new concept. It's kind of got lost along the way as I think traditional college sort of took mainstream and discussions have happened. And I think it's an opportunity for that parents and young people are actually thinking about. But it does need to be clear. So if you're going to have an apprenticeship program, you do need to have it pretty specific on what's the length of it, what is my expectations while I'm in the apprenticeship program. I think you're starting, at least when I talk to students who may come to a traditional program, they'll often ask that question, can I do an apprenticeship with this? And that really, in our case, because they're in school full-time and then trying to do an apprenticeship, it's really hard to pull that off. An internship, which is a little different, is a different model that works. But where I see the ones that are successful is the businesses are integrated with the programs at the colleges.
At the outset?
At the outset, usually on an advisory group. Each of the majors in the community colleges have to have advisory people. And so they're often there talking about what's happening in their businesses and what's going on. And they're able to then make changes to a program and adapt. And also build, key is that relationship. It's a really key relationship where programs can set up internships because they know the company or companies that are involved and they go along with that. One great example, I'll give you an example, up at Central Maine Community College in Auburn, it's the best I could call it. It's kind of a hybrid of an internship apprenticeship. Students come into the automotive program and work and take classes for 8 weeks. They then get put into a dealership for 8 weeks and they're being paid. While they're in that dealership for 8 weeks, they come back to the college for 8 weeks, they go back to the dealership, and each time they make that change, they're getting about a 50% increase per hour in their pay. And so when a student sits down and does the math with their parents before whatever, they look into that, they're saying, well, listen, here's what it's costing me for this 8 weeks of classes, here's what they're paying me the next 8 weeks. And all of a sudden, you're doing that math, you're going, I can almost come out of this debt-free, which is hopefully is our goal in our community colleges, that we really, there's very little debt. coming out with students. So that's a great model. I think it needs to be expanded. Some building construction programs are looking at that model now in some of the other campuses, mm-hmm. And some of those other programs, because two things: students earning, they're learning, and they're building relationship with the company, which is really key.
And is there an assumption that if you're in an apprenticeship program like that, when you complete it, you'll be hired by the company?
That is the idea, that over those mm-hmm. iterations of, I don't know if it's four mm-hmm. or five times they're doing those 8-week iterations, they're getting to know the student. There's no guarantee that student's going to work there, mm-hmm. but they're getting that comfort zone. And the student's starting to say, is this a good culture fit in this particular dealership for me?
And is there like a critical mass of the size of a company that would benefit from an apprenticeship program? I'm thinking, you know, I don't know, 90-some% of the businesses in Maine have fewer than 20 employees.
Right.
So how accessible is an apprenticeship program to a smaller company?
Yeah, I've seen them in small companies and in small shops that they've done that. The key with that is, you've got to have a person or somebody training that. That student has to have somebody at that company that's they're mentoring,
okay.
They're guiding them. And that's really the key. You can be a small company and have that, but you're generally going to find it in larger mid-sized companies where they can afford to have a little bit of downtime of that highly trained tech, making sure that apprentice is doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Okay, yeah. Great. Laura, what do you see with apprenticeships and internships?
We use interns ourselves, and we try to connect people with other businesses in our community. Our high school, and we have York County Community College down there, have done a really nice job of placing people in the community. I think particularly in our area in food services, there's been a lot of internships out of the high school, even in some of the alternative ed department programs we've worked with to get kids in. We're mm-hmm. in the middle of doing that again, both with alternative ed and actually this time with the special ed department, working on some mm-hmm. kind of internship opportunities with sort of later career potential for kids in that program. So I think what Charles said is true. You really need, we have someone who's dedicated to that, to doing the paperwork, to doing the training, to being available.
So are you acting as like a matchmaker with your members?
If we're able, mm-hmm. Or at the very least a conduit for the schools to be able to reach out to businesses. what we've usually tried to do is say, you know, if you've got a need or if you have a kid who has a really particular interest, come to us, and then we'll find a business to match with that. So we've had some success with that. They also have an Econobunks program in the middle school level in the Kennebunks, which is really nice, and the kids train for a full year. All the curriculum is built out of very practical things like how to write a check, how to balance a checkbook. I wish I had done this, but you know, things like, you know, how you handle a salary, how you budget, and then how you interview, how to put together a resume. And then ultimately the last step is a full day of them working in a created town in the gym where they actually build these stores and whatnot. So we find a lot of the businesses become involved even at that level.
At middle school.
And try to, you know, help kids think about career paths, think about options. You know, there's kids who run the bank, kids who get into government, and then kind of try to bring that continuity up to the high school level then. We also are finding a lot more interest in the trades. Mm-hmm. So last year they did, I guess this spring with the younger kids, trying to bring in trade folks. They actually had a trade fair at Kennebunk High School, and we were successful in placing people during lunchtime. There was a lot of interest in contractors, landscaping businesses, different things like that. So we were able to, again, provide speakers or people who could meet with the kids from the community businesses. So.
Hmm. Well, that all sounds really good. I'm like middle school. That sort of sets me back for a moment to try to capture a middle schooler's attention and get them thinking about a potential career choice or an experiment in a particular industry. But it sounds like you've got some good cooperation there.
Yeah, and I think especially important, though, is the sort of renewed focus on the trades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for many years, especially in Kennebunk, it was very college-driven, and obviously a lot of the kids there do go on to college. But to think that there are alternatives, whether it's, you know, carpentry, electrical,
right.
You know, I come from a family where there are three of us, Both of my brothers chose trades. Mm-hmm. They have always made more money. But, you know, those are really valuable things that, you know, you can't mm-hmm. find anymore. Mm-hmm. We laugh at the chamber that we have one electrician member and, you know, trying to find an electrician or a plumber is impossible. So, mm-hmm. you know, having them understand that, having them understand that there's welding, that there's machining, you know, there's all these different trades out there mm-hmm. that they maybe didn't think of. You know, I think that's a great thing for those kids to find their place.
And Veronica, what's your experience with apprentices and interns?
So Arundel Machine doesn't offer an official apprenticeship program, but what we do is reach out to all the community colleges about mid-year, and we say to them, if you have somebody in your machining program who's a star, we want to hire them. So send them our way. We've actually brought three machinists down from Northern Maine Community College.
Oh, really?
And we help them relocate. We give them some money. To get them down here. We look for places for them to live. We're not officially out there renting for them, but we help them as much as we can. And that's been a great experience for us. We also do a lot of work with the high schools. And we invited them a couple weeks ago, I think it was, for Manufacturing Day to come tour our facility. We do work with Baxter Academy. We've done work with their robotics program. We made some parts for their robot and they were very successful with it. So we get to introduce a lot of students to what we're doing, and I think that people didn't know that we're making nuclear submarine parts right here in Southern Maine. Right. So we bring them in, they actually get to see it, they get to see work in process, and I think it really opens up their eyes to an experience that they could have as a good salaried position for the rest of their lives if they want it. Mm-hmm. So we also offer paid internships for high school students if they want to come work for us over the summer. We have a student at York County Community College who is on our payroll, and we work around his schedule. Whatever he can do for work, we're open to him coming in and putting in as many hours as he can, and I see him staying on with us full time when he finishes. So we offer a lot of different experiences like that.
Interesting. And would any of you offer an example of a miss in terms of when you any of your programs or things you tried that didn't quite succeed?
I mean, I guess we offer a traditional job fair in March every year, mm-hmm. and it turns into more of a seasonal job fair, but there are year-round positions. The first couple of years that we offered it, we really drove young people. We did a lot of training for young people on how to present yourself and how to put together a letter. And I'll tell you, every year we got five.
Oh, wow.
So it was really kind of, I don't know if they just weren't as familiar with the chamber. I mean, all of the kids who went through the program got hired on the spot automatically. It was great. But I think that we eventually moved it into the school so that they could just go during school. That was a lot more successful. Mm. We do see a lot of kids, you know, a couple hundred potentially, that go through that job fair, which is great. We try not to do it on like crazy school week, because we did one year and all the kids came in pajamas and employers were really a little turned off by that, so we had to run around and explain to everyone at the tables that they were actually there because, you know, it was they came directly from school and they're really dedicated, but we literally had like 200 kids in pajamas show up for a job fair. Less than successful for us, but you know, I mean, I think finding ways to get to those young people on their own terms instead of expecting them to come to sort of traditional things that have worked for adults, you know, was a lesson learned for us.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just want to make a brief announcement. We have a pickup truck that needs to be moved that's next to the dumpster. It's a white Ford pickup, 253-85.
I'm trying to get out of the way.
Maybe that's why. I just got an email. Maybe it's the parking lights. There.
Just hurry back, though. So I'm curious, are kids today learning those sorts of skills, those interview skills? There, here's what you should wear to an interview, here's how you should put up a resume. Are they learning those in school, or are they learning? I mean, I assume they're learning them at the community college level, but do they already have that when they get to community college?
Well, a lot do. I mean, we range from the 18-year-old up to the 58 plus 60 sometime. So yeah, there's a wealth of experience with people coming to the community colleges and doing that, and there are classes and there are seminars and things like that. They can do that. I say that. The survey after survey after survey that comes out nationally always tells us the colleges say we're doing a great job preparing those things, but when they talk to the CEOs and other people in the companies, they say, no, they're not doing a good job. So there's definitely a disconnect with what I think colleges feel they're doing and what others, executives and actual companies say they're not. So I think there's an opportunity there for some real dialogue and conversation saying, tell me really what's going on here. And we have to get away from the anecdote. It happened once. And so you think it's everybody that's not prepared. Mm-hmm. And so we got to be careful about when we're telling those stories, mm-hmm. like really out of 10 people of the last 5 years, how many really weren't prepared mm-hmm. type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where those discussions, there's opportunity for discussions there to fix that.
So why don't you explore that a little more, Charlie? Yeah. What is it that the employers are looking for, and maybe there's a shortfall in the preparation of their prospective employees, and what are the students looking for? You hear all the time about millennials. They want to work someplace that they have an emotional connection. They mm-hmm. they share the same values. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that were like prime when I was looking for a job, which was salary and benefits, right. take a lesser role. Right. So, talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think right now, what are they saying? We've got five generations in the workplace.
Yep.
So with those five generations, you can look at the Z gens are starting to enter through the doors. They're interested in opportunity. Your Xers and maybe your boomers are saying, listen, how's my retirement plan? That's more important. Is that going well? Is my benefits strong when I need maybe more health care in my later years than those younger people? So I think companies really have a challenge in balancing those five generations and what their needs are. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing some really interesting things. I mean, just at least in Portland where I live, you know, there isn't a young couple without a dog or two, right? So dogs and pets have just taken over. I'm hearing companies are saying, what do you pay a week for doggy daycare?
Wow.
We'll subsidize that.
Wow.
Or we're building a doggy daycare. You know, here we have childcare issues for a certain class of folks in our society, but there are companies worrying about the young couple that needs something to do with the dog needs to go somewhere.
Or dog-friendly offices.
Or dog-friendly offices. So so companies are challenged. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do we spread the dollars we have to help engage, you know, have, quote-unquote, an engaged, fair workplace? Mm-hmm. It's just endless on the benefits that you can provide. So I think I think things that are still steady is there opportunity? Am I going to be engaged? Is there opportunity for me to be trained and possibly cross-trained? Because one of the tenets of keeping a good employee is they want to know how to do their job and do it well. Mm-hmm. If they don't feel they're doing their job well, that's one reason they're going to leave. For you. And so that's a basic tenet of anybody going into a company. I meet very few people who go, no, I just want to do the minimum and get in and get out, do my, I don't meet those people. I know they're there. I know people can identify them, but I don't think that's a very small percentage of any company.
Okay. So Veronica, talk a little bit about what you look for as an employer and what you think your employees are looking for.
So I think for us, our employees are generally looking for us to be as flexible as possible. You know, can they take a day off if they need to do an appointment or do something with their family? So we do work with them as much as possible. We implemented an earned time program so that if an employee works the scheduled work week, that's Monday to Thursday, 6 to 4:30, Friday, 6 to noon. If they work that work week and they've got 46 hours by noontime on Friday, they'll get a earned time hour on the books. And they can take it in 8-hour increments. You can earn actually up to 40 hours a year with that program. And they keep it forever. If they don't use it, it rolls over. They can take they can schedule it just like vacation time. So we've done that to try to be a little more flexible and allow employees to take time away from work that they can get paid for. That's been a successful program for us. We introduced new supplemental benefits. One of the great things that's going to be happening for us over the next year, we're putting on an addition, and we're going to have a fully staffed cafeteria. I know that a lot of the employees are looking forward to that. And
you mean people will prepare lunch for your employees, fully staffed?
Right.
Wow.
How many employees?
We're going to be over 100 probably next year. So we're getting up there, and we're trying to find it's a lot of times some of the things that we do are very cumbersome. So we're trying to find ways to, you know, make things like this cafeteria happen so that if you come, our guys come into work, some of them at 5 o'clock in the morning, if they want a breakfast sandwich at 8 o'clock, we want a place for them to go. They don't have to leave the property to go get something to eat. You know, vending machines are nice, but sometimes they're not the greatest food.
And Laura, do you have any thoughts on that?
I was just thinking, I mean, it goes back to a word Charlie was talking about with culture. You know, I think often about the Nonantum, which again is seasonal, but you know, for the 8 months a year, 9 months a year that they're open, you know, a lot of the seasonal places, when people come back next year, they don't have the same staff. But yet even the young people return there, and I think it's the culture, it's that feeling a part of something. They're driven by a lot of community service and charity, but they do a lot of in-house training for every employee. It doesn't matter if you've started there in the sort of $9, $10 an hour childcare position, you're going to get trained, you're going to get gear, you're going to get a little swag, and you know, just the way they have created the culture there, people feel a part of it, and you've seen young people come back after college and continue with them, and it's pretty rare, I think, in hospitality to see that kind of continuity, especially for a seasonal business. So.
One of the things I hear too, especially in the hospitality area for us, and it was a concept that is very helpful, if you do have part-time jobs, and many companies would offer them, make the scheduling consistent. And if everyone agreed to consistent scheduling, you would have an employee who will stay with you for that part-time, because they know and the other employer that they give 20 hours to gives them consistent scheduling. That's a really simple fix, I think, if people can pull that off, and especially in the hospitality business where they will pull off 2 20-hour things. It's not ultimately what they want, but when you're trying to serve customers in a busy tourist time, that's an easy fix that people can try to do and sort of agree that they'll have a consistent schedule for that person.
So how about if we talk about some other strategies for keeping employees?
Sure.
Let's say you've been successful in hiring, and now you're looking in a, you know, you're operating in a community in a state where unemployment is around 3%. How do you keep those employees? How do you make sure they're not being poached by a competitor? So one is flexibility, right? If you're hiring part-time people, be consistent with the hours.
Right.
That will engender loyalty because they can figure out how to work the rest of their lives around that.
Exactly.
Do you have other tips, Charlie?
Well, I'll just go down. I wrote these down because I think these are really good, broad enough concepts that companies. The Coastal Enterprise Incorporated puts out something called the Good Job Framework. And it basically comprises of three things. It comprises of what they call a living wage, and we can get that data for you. Massachusetts Institute of Technology puts out a scale calculator that you can figure out what's a living wage here in Maine.
Isn't it like $17 an hour now?
It's between, depending on part of the state, I call it 15 to 17, depending on where you live in the state.
Yep.
The second thing is basic benefits, which include paid time off, employer-subsidized health coverage, if you can do it, retirement savings plan are the three basic benefits. And the third thing is called a fair and engaging workplace, and that includes scheduling notice, knowing when they're going to be scheduled, performance reviews, and training opportunities and development skills. That is what they call a good job framework, to just as the basics to, and then if you're already doing that and you're doing it particularly well, I think the other tip for companies, tell that story. Make that a big deal. Because oftentimes you're thinking, oh, of course we do this. This is what we've always done. Well, to that person out there who's looking at a number of opportunities, the company who can really sell, these are the things we're going to give you in a very comprehensive way, I think we'll get the notice of potential candidates.
Mm-hmm. And for
what's the name of that? Oh, it's CEI. You could go to their website, and they call it their Good Job Framework. And basically, if they're investing or doing any investment with a company, they want that company to instill those concepts into their practices.
And Veronica, how about from your perspective, what are some strategies for keeping good workers? Besides building a cafeteria and letting them have Egg McMuffins at 8 in the morning.
Darn right.
So one of the things that we do at Arundel Machine is we try to make sure that our employees get some cross-training, work in different departments, so that they're exposed to all the different areas of production at our workplace. And in the past year, we noticed that we had a skills gap. We had employees who weren't up to speed on reading blueprints. And we get some very technical blueprints from our customers. So we had a professor from Northern Maine Community College come down and spend 3 weeks with us, bringing small groups of employees together to do training on dimensions and tolerance for machining. So I thought that was a great program. We've also launched social media at Arundel Machine. So we're out on Facebook now. You can apply for a job through our Facebook page. But one of the great things that we're doing with that is we're going around to individual employees and asking them to share their stories. Different things that they're good at, what do they want out there, and what can they say about the company. So I think that's been a good experience for our employees. And I think one of the biggest things that employees look for is somebody who'll listen. So as HR manager, I'm always after my supervisors, did you check in with your people today?
Right.
You know, what's going
right.
on? Is there somebody who's struggling? And I think that if you are a company that listens to your employees, and even if it's just listening, even if there's nothing you can do to help, that says a lot about your culture, and it makes an employee loyal to the company.
And I think when you talk about telling your story, Arundel Machine, I'm familiar with, they've been members of ours, and their vice president was on our board for a while, but going to that manufacturing day, seeing the Instagram launch that you did with the countdown, you know, seeing the employees on there.
Wait. So talk about the Instagram launch. I don't know what you're referencing.
So you did, was it 10 days of...
We had a countdown to our Facebook launch, and each day we put a piece of metal in the machine, and we machined the number for the day. So every day the video went up, and it was pretty exciting to watch. And, you know, as HR manager, I'm not out on the shop floor a lot, so I don't get to see the machines work. So it was nice for me to just get to see what was happening. But it was a great way to introduce us to social media and to start thinking about the different things that we want to portray about the company.
And it built excitement, and it was nice to see the faces of employees there, you know, kind of talking about their thing. And it was great to follow that up with a
manufacturing day.
And have the tours. And I was fortunate enough to go through with a group of kids and a teacher from the Sanford Tech School. And in the beginning, it was very typical teenage reaction, like, and by the end, they were so engaged and so excited that, you know, it was really great. So I think, you know, you talk about a company that's learning to tell its story and really make a difference. I really see that with you guys.
Right. I mean, one of the most satisfying things for us as a company, one of the kids from Baxter Academy at the end, when they're getting their swag, their t-shirts, and the things that we had to offer for them, that he was like, this is the best field trip I've ever been on.
And
I'm like, my
awesome.
Best field trip was Funtown.
Right.
Wow, that's terrific.
Another example, and Veronica, I don't know if one of these students went to you, but there was a story last year, just this past spring, I guess, with the graduates from Kennebunk who were taking courses over at Sanford for machine tool, and then the employers, the community college, the high school, the employers, they had a signing day when those students decided to graduate, you know, not decide, when they were graduating, the press came, and they had a signing day that they were signing with these companies after completing high school, and they already had X amount of credits from dual enrollment between Sanford Technical Center and the community college. And to me, I think just more of that would start, people would start scratching their head and having conversations earlier with their kid going, how did, you know, maybe you should consider that. Or who do you talk to get in and consider those? And I think there's opportunities there to sort of, and the reason I'm saying this, we know in the state of Maine there are about 12,000 high school graduates. What we also know is 38% of them, close to 4,000 of them, don't go on to any form of training or education beyond high school immediately. So they're going into jobs, and I'm not saying it's not important. They've got to fill these jobs. But my guess is with a lot of them, these are the $11, $12 an hour jobs, and they're going to struggle at that, especially once they're out of high school. They want transportation, and they want to do some other things. And I think it's really important for us to identify who those students are and give them some pathways that aren't traditional college,
and
that aren't traditional. And I'm speaking from somebody from a traditional college, but we do a lot of training programs.
Well, I was just going to ask about that. So my sense is the community college system has recently put a lot of emphasis in short-term certificate and credentialing programs, right? And is it specifically geared toward those kids who are graduating and then don't have any other kind of postgraduate training opportunities or jobs lined up? I mean, is that sort of the...
That's it. And the okay. other pockets of people that are kind of on the sidelines mm-hmm. in our economy right now, we're predicting there's at least 10 to 12,000 people at any given time that if given, close a skills gap for them in some way, they can then be moving into these openings and these jobs. And they might be the entry-level jobs, but that allows companies to move the entry-level person up to the next level.
So I know you have a lot of those certificate and credentialing programs, but I also know there are a lot of people here from the healthcare sector.
Sure.
Can you talk a little about what you have specific to that?
Sure. So you mentioned, you know, what Maine Health has been doing recently. We've been involved in several of those programs. Just as short as 2 years ago, most medical assisting, which is that person you often see in a doctor's office and a lot of them in hospitals, they're kind of in between a CNA and a nurse, medical assistants. They can do both clinical and office stuff, or in this case, if you've ever gone to a hospital, how much time your practitioner's on the pad or putting information in. So there's a lot of coding and things that go on with that. So what we've done is we always had a two-year associate degree, and healthcare people are saying we can't wait for them for 2 years. And so we've made the switch in a lot of our campuses to cut that down to a one-year certificate, but make it an apprenticeship. So in the case of Maine Health, we've done a couple of pilots now with them where students are employees of Maine Health working 20 hours a week, but then coming to school and doing their job for 20 hours a week, but then doing the apprenticeship for 20 hours a week in the hospital and getting their classes at night for medical assisting. So what I like about that model, there's skin in the game from everyone. The students, it's not costing them anything, and they're still working and making money, but they have to get to those classes 3 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
So there's skin in the game for them there. The hospital's got the trainers, the apprentices going in, and then the community colleges come in with the curriculum and the work. And that's an interesting model that they want to expand into the other healthcare occupations.
So is that program offered at all of the community college campuses?
It's not offered at all, and again, it's employer-based. So what's driving it is Maine Health. Maine Health wants to expand it into their Midcoast region and into southern Maine, both at the hospital in Biddeford and Sanford. The idea is that they want to expand that opportunity. It's actually a job it's a job in Maine Health. It's called Medical Assistant Apprentice. And you as an employer, maybe you're a PSS or you're doing laundry service or something, but want to move up to a higher paid job, they'll allow you to apply and get into that and move forward. So they're very invested in making pathways available
to
folks.
And if other health-based organizations wanted to do a similar program, they would have to develop that within the community college structure?
With us or any other instructional provider. I mean, there's examples of adult eds around the state. They're doing this very same type of training with their local. We just have been working more closely with them. Maine Health has their own training school for phlebotomists. I mean, how many get their blood drawn? You know, how many times? Well, they needed to keep up with that, but they partnered with us to help build out that phlebotomy school mm-hmm. that they already do. So we're going to do more in partnership with them. Surgical technologists, patient service reps. We're going to work on a very short-term certificate so that they can bring in a patient service rep. That person, that first time you call, that person who picks up the phone and you're trying to explain what you mm-hmm. need, that's a patient service rep. They need tons of those okay. folks.
Yeah. Interesting.
But they're creating pathways. That's the key.
Right, right.
Start here, but you can go here.
Right. Yeah. That's where you get your foot in the door.
Right.
Right. So there is a question I wanted to ask that's, I think, very specific to Southern Maine, you know, here in the Biddeford-Saco area, and that is the proximity to Boston. Mm. I think, Kathleen, you were saying that Boston markets can pay twice what your organization pays, and it's a 1 hour or 1 hour and 15-minute train ride down that way. So are there any specific suggestions tips that you can offer with respect to how do you attract and keep people when Boston is just not so far away and can offer some things that are really out of the realm of a lot of Maine-based companies? And I should say, you know, nationally, it doesn't matter which industry you're in here in Maine, we pay about 80% of the national average. That's in the tech field, that's in healthcare, that's in manufacturing, it's across the board. I remember when my husband and I moved here 33 years ago, it was okay, we're going to make 20% less, but we're going to live in Maine. And so yeah. that was the big trade-off because we were coming from a Boston market, and I can't even drive on 495 anymore. So it was the right decision for us.
Right.
But nowadays I wonder how do you compete with that? What are some strategies for people trying to stay one step ahead of Boston? Anyone? I know it's a big nut to crack.
I think more signs right outside your business going, you know, work here, you could be home in 5 minutes.
Right.
Honestly, I go to Boston. I've got a sister who lives right in the city. She's a city girl. She loves it. I love visiting her. But I can take about two days, and I want to come back to Maine. I mean, that's me. Boston's growing. It's expanding. But it is a commuter nightmare. It really is. If you do it and you watch it, people give up 2.5 to 3 hours a day just commuting. And I think that message alone is something Maine companies can grapple with.
Okay.
But I think we're still losing, especially the young people. You know, I moved, my husband and I moved 16 years ago here, and for all the reasons that you said, but we moved from New York, and both our girls are back there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard, you know, given their specific careers, it made a lot of sense for them, but I think we still grapple with that. In our area, we're seeing a lot more folks coming back later in their 30s because they want to raise their kids here. Mm-hmm. They've kind of gotten that city life out of their system maybe, mm-hmm. And they're looking to settle here. So we've got that gap. Like we've you know, Kennebunk's the oldest town yeah. in the state. We're so proud of that.
Oh, I thought Harpswell was.
Yeah, no, it's apparently us.
And it's so interesting because Biddeford is the youngest.
Yes. Yes. No, Jim was just reminding me of that this week, yeah. the braggart.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
so we're... We're really old. So we've got, obviously, folks who really look and retire here or stay here and kind of live out that part of their lives, and especially with access to good health care. But we are finding a lot of our young people do not choose to stay here right after college. You know, they kind of find their way out in the world, and a lot of them in our area do go down to Boston. And they're willing to deal with the crazy commuter nightmares and all
right.
of those things for salaries, for getting their careers to that point. And I honestly, we have not found a solution mm-hmm. to that. And I think, you know, for us particularly, one of the most difficult things is that we don't have the housing. So if you are a young person and you need an apartment here, you are not going to find it in Kennebunk or Kennebunkport mm-hmm. or very few in Arundel. The market is such that you would pay $1,500, $1,600 for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you'd go over to Biddeford. All the Biddeford pricing has really gone up as well. So, mm-hmm. so if you are even a brand new young family, we have very little of that. We have In Kennebunkport, they have the new Heritage Housing Trust that is trying to address some of those issues. I mean, our own policeman can't afford to live there. Our own firemen can't afford to live there, our teachers. So, you know, we have to, as a community, look at, you know, building incentives. We have to look at density bonuses, anything we can. But we also have to overcome the whole stigma of affordable housing. You know, they did a company out of, or a nonprofit actually out of the Seacoast region, did a charrette on affordable housing, and people were out with pitchforks and torches, you know, to get people to understand what that means. And even this new, I think it's only a 16, no, it's even smaller, like an 8-house development that is hopefully coming next year in Kennebunkport, having to overcome sort of that misperception of what that is, to be able to, you know, say this is where your policeman can live, this is where your teachers can live. But again, it's 8 units.
Right.
So when you want to either bring those young people back after colleges and they're making less money and there's less opportunity than those cities, and then we can't find them any place to live unless it's in mom and dad's basement, you know, there's sort of a lot there that we are still working on that we're nowhere near.
Do you think there's some political will coalescing around that? I mean, I hear that from a lot of different communities that you know, the state definition for affordable housing is no more than 30% of your take-home pay goes to your housing costs. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. A lot of people hear affordable, they think low income, they think subsidized. Mm-hmm. And so there's sort of a knee-jerk reaction to trying to promote that development. I know that commercial real estate folks and developers will say, the way that the markets are right now, it's not affordable for them. They can't make a profit to developing workforce housing. Mm-hmm. They either have to go to the luxury level or they have to go to low income where they can count on subsidies. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, are you folks seeing any kind of political will to change that? Or
I think we are in our local communities, and that's great, but I think it's also balanced by, we've got this aging population over there, so we need to build infrastructure and put funding toward that as well, whether it's transportation, wider sidewalks, any of those things. So I think all the communities have this balancing act, but I do see more of a push now in the Kennebunks to address, as we look at our schools and we look at Consolidated, which has, I don't know what the last number is, but it, you know, beautiful new school that we just spent millions of dollars on and has maybe 100 students. And parents were pulling their kids out because there might be 15 kids in one grade level, and they want their kids to have more social opportunities. So now the whole district is grappling with that. So I think people are willing to start looking at that, but I think we're still years away from making a big change there.
Just when you were speaking about older folks there, I realized I didn't ask you to talk a little bit about your recruitment program for retirees. So I realize I'm just sort of pivoting now. Yeah. But could you? Because I think that what you're doing is applicable to so many other industries. So,
so in the Kennebunks, we have a great youth base of employers, but since there is so much driven by hospitality, and since we already were great at putting those young kids to work, what a lot we were hearing from a lot of the businesses is that come August, all those college kids leave, and then our shoulder season has gotten so much, you know, bigger out there. So we're super busy through the end of October. We have Prelude in December, and a lot of businesses were forced to close kind of come Labor Day, and that was becoming more of an issue. So when we looked at our job fair, our regular job fair, you know, pulls in maybe around 300 people, and that's great. And if you're a housekeeper, literally people will chase you down the aisles and throw cash at you. But, you know, there were still those gaps, and a lot of the businesses were really saying, you know, we just can't fill that extra season. Mm. So the only population, again, because we're old, that we saw that we really hadn't tapped into is retirees. And so the Kennebunks in the last decade have really attracted many more retirees. And some of them are, you know, really active, captains of industry, people who owned their own companies, ran their own companies. And a lot of them, you know, maybe just didn't want to just sit home. Mm. So we had a committee put together of people from the aging committee, people from some of our internal committees, and they came up with the idea of having an older workers job fair. So the whole purpose was to really target the retirees in the community, people who were there for that season, who could perhaps fill that gap. But what we're also finding is that, you know, our first job fair, 150 people came. We had, I think, 13 businesses. And the connection was so tremendous. And it wasn't just the businesses really excited that they had people with great life experience, great work ethic, you know, which we heard a lot of complaining about teenagers, but the people themselves felt really valued and excited. And it wasn't, and in a lot of cases, they're not people that needed the money, and some of them did, so this was a great bonus for them. But it was that opportunity to be valued, to get back out in a community, to feel really a part of it. So we did our second one in April. Again, 150 people. This time, we had to turn away employers. I think we had 26 in the building. Mm. And just really valuable. Some of the hospitality businesses use those folks as their workforce to cover the fall through the prelude season. Some of them just hire them right from the beginning. More success with jobs that are less physical, though we've had a former contractor is now, you know, doing maintenance for a string of hotels. Oh, we have gardeners. We have people like that. Yeah. A lot of front desk employees, a lot of people who, you know, we did bring and connect them with some additional computer training, because for some of those folks reentering, being able to use reservation systems or things like that. But a lot of people just came with incredible skills. And so for us, we have found that to be successful. The businesses themselves have found that those are, you know, valuable, really steady employees who know how to deal with customers, who know that they need to get to work on time if the sun is shining, the beach is calling, and will stay through those seasons so that they don't have to close earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, the smaller businesses are still struggling with that, but a lot of the larger ones that have capacity have been able to bring in retirees to really fill those gaps, and it's worked.
So how did you get 150 people to your job fair?
We marketed it everywhere we could. We even sent it out to some of the other healthcare facilities. We had it in the newspapers. We had it on social media. And we partnered with our senior center in Lower Village, and that's where we held the job fair. It's a little tight, honestly, but a lot of the people were familiar with going there, so they were really comfortable. The first year we offered a free lunch. That was maybe a mistake, but we had to cull out who was really just there for the meal, but that's the way it is for every chamber event. But it has been really successful, and people ask about it. People look forward to it. The businesses themselves, you know, the people who got kind of, we had a cutoff just due to space, and businesses were saying, well, put me on the list already for next year. I heard, you know, the Colony hired 12 people. I need to do that. We need those employees. So people are really seeing them as a valuable labor pool now, and that's a really positive thing.
Great. Well, let's open it up to questions. Does anyone here have one? Yes, Shirley, right? Yes.
Everybody work together on it. I know some people haven't heard of it, that I've heard talk about having trouble finding employees, and if we could just get a larger push of people combining strategies. And one of the things that he specifically, I heard a presentation again just recently, that he said one of the concerns of people relocating here, other than housing, which I agree is about a crisis situation, the other is trailing spouses. Mm-hmm. And how do we educate a potential employee that there are also opportunities for their partners for employment also?
First of all, it's a great program, and there's some evidence that it's working. So the latest numbers from our state economist said, you know, they follow who leaves and who comes in. We actually had a net in-migration this year of about 1,900 individuals. There was a total movement of about 3,800 or something like that, and 1,900 to our good. So that reverses a trend over the last couple of years or few years. When you look at those numbers, I asked, are those retirees? And she goes, no, they are actually people with bachelor degrees in their mid-30s. So very much what you guys have experienced. So I think it's a great program. And the reason a lot of us don't know about it is they don't spend money putting the ads here. They put them out there, and unless you're out there. But I was traveling recently and saw one of the ads, and they're very good, and they're very effective. I mean, I don't beseech any weather catastrophes on anybody, but let's talk about the fires in California. Let's talk about the flooding in Florida. Let's talk about the other issues around the country. I mean, honestly, we don't have that stuff here. The number one question I get from people when I travel is, tell me about the snow. Tell me how cold it is. And what I have to tell them is I give them a comparison. Yeah, if you go into Presque Isle, Maine, the average snowfall is about 120 inches a year. And, you know, their eyes bug out. But if you're considering mid-Bangor, no, it's anywhere between 50, 60, 65 inches a year. And it isn't like it stays that way constant. You kind of have to explain that you're not walking around with 50 inches of snow. It melts, and then it comes, and it melts again, and it comes. And so you do have these, and you make a joke about it with some of them. But another example, my wife and I have recently, in the last 2 months, have gone out with 4 different people from out of state. She works for MMCRI, which is the Research Institute. They've been recruiting people. Well, on our own time, when those new recruits come in, we'll take them out on the town. We'll show them the communities. It takes like 3 hours of our time, 4 hours of a night. And they really appreciate that personal touch with people who live in the area. So if you have an opportunity when you're trying to recruit somebody, not so much that the HR person has to do it or some other manager. Just get a person who'd be willing to go out and take this person out to dinner and show them around. That person is definitely coming. He's from Florida. He's a young 30-something, and he's moving. He's on his way here. So, and a second one was a couple out of Massachusetts who both have recent college degrees, but don't see the rat race on 495 and the rest of it, and they're hearing about Maine. And we're hoping we'll hook them, too, in the next month, hopefully before the snow flies.
I know Live and Work is having a boomerang event next month, and that's specifically targeted to the people you were talking about, Laura, young families that want to come back and are, you know, attracted to our low crime rate and the beauty of the ocean and the mountains, and it's a lifestyle that they want to embrace.
Right.
And my husband makes fun of me because every time we're in an Uber, if the driver looks 45 or younger, I start talking
there
up Maine.
There you go.
You ought to consider coming, you know.
I do the same thing, Carol. It works. I mean, if the average, if you just do talk to people when you're traveling, because they don't know a lot about us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, all they know is L.L. Bean and lobsters.
That's it.
Yes.
I was just going to say that I know real estate investors that see Biddeford as a potential bedroom community for Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if we get the high-speed train, it's 40 minutes or whatever.
Right.
But to some of your points, it could be that it's a stage. You leave to get your training. And that's often understood. I want to live in Maine. I have to do the Atlanta thing for a few years because that's where the opportunity is with one of the grade 8 accounting firms or whatever.
Right.
And then maybe age 35, they come back.
Mm-hmm.
So, but people would rather live in Maine than Worcester.
Right.
Commute to Boston, especially if they can do the train there.
Mm-hmm.
So the in-migration is very exciting. And I don't know how people are hearing about Biddeford. We own about 100 units in the area. And they come and they only know Elements Coffee Shop, Portland. They know all these things.
Right.
They don't know anything about Old Biddeford. They don't care.
Right.
And it's a very exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow they're hearing about these things, and they're hearing very positive things. We get more requests for Biddeford area now than we do Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very exciting thing that's occurring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Biddeford's definitely coming into its own right now.
Right.
Yep.
Sure.
Another question? Yes.
I'm just curious, with the advent of technology and people applying for positions online, it seems that when, in feedback that I've gotten from friends and colleagues, that when they're applying online, they just never hear back. Even though they're completely qualified for the position, they just never seem to hear back. And I know, you know, I don't know if it's a number of years of experience thing or what it may be, but I'm wondering if technology that's supposed to make these jobs easier to find are actually hindering get because of the screening process? Mm-hmm. Just wanted to.
I think that's a really interesting question because, you know, all of our panelists have talked about a way to keep an employee happy and loyal is that kind of high touch recognition that they're important to the company. And so if your first experience is you apply for a job through a portal on a website and you don't get anything, what is that saying? So anybody want to address that?
I can say when I did something, you know, we had job openings when I first started there, and we did some online advertising, which is great. Sometimes it's just the sheer vastness of the response that all you could maybe, I mean, I tried to send off an email to everyone, but if I've got one job and I've got 150 applicants and they're from all over the country and they're from, you know, so for me, we knew we needed someone to start pretty quickly. I kind of culled out everyone that really couldn't do that and locally, but sometimes it's just this double-edged sword that you're one person doing hiring and there are literally so many to get through that you might be looking for something really specific for that fit and those other folks just don't fit in there. And you know, sadly, you might not get to everyone mm-hmm. if you've gotten that kind of response. Mm-hmm. So.
I agree with Laura that sometimes it's just an overwhelming task. We do try to respond to as many people as we can, and now when you apply for a job through our Facebook page, you're going to get thank you for your interest. We hired an admin in the last year, so one of the things that I'm going to have her kick off doing is if somebody comes in and drops off an application, she's going to send out a letter that day. So. We do try to do that as much as we can, but like Laura said, it can be overwhelming.
I would just add, I think because of technology, just using the technology to communicate back. I mean, one of the things I'm starting to notice now is you're seeing people post on LinkedIn openings. Well, how cool will it be to simply say, hey, thanks for everybody interested in the such and such position I posted last month. We found our candidate. Apologize if you didn't, you know, not apologize, but thank you for your interest. Keep an eye open. But yeah, even though it wasn't that individual message to them, they didn't feel like they were totally ignored. And I think the younger audiences appreciate that, you know, they communicated something out, especially for a small company that doesn't have a lot of staff. Mm. They, you know, you can use social media to sort of say, and maybe you're announcing the person who did get hired and you're thanking everybody who showed interest. Mm.
I think we have time for one more question. Who will it be? Come on, there must be one more question from you.
I just make a quick comment. There's a lot of opportunity for young people to start their own businesses.
Yeah.
There's a lot of support around that.
Mm-hmm.
Maine has the largest percentage of self-employed people per capita anywhere in the country. So that's an opportunity for young people to stay, start a business, create something. You understand there's a sacrifice initially. They're usually willing to pay that, but the opportunities can be greater than.
And there are a lot of people who work remotely, who live in Maine mm-hmm. and work for, like, you know, Silicon Valley tech companies. It's as long as you're in a community that has decent broadband, you have a lot of opportunities available to you. So I think that's one of the things that Live and Work has been trying to promote. is you don't have to think about your commuting distance anymore. There's a whole other way you can consider being employed. So, yes?
I just wanted to respond to this gentleman. I think it's important to acknowledge what he said, that applicants are saying, I don't hear back from anybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think as employers, it's important that we get back to them for a number of reasons. Yeah. Number one, they might be our future customer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to have good thoughts about us if they had an experience with us that didn't give them what they needed.
Right.
I cannot tell you how many people, when I get back to them, it is a priority. I get back to everybody.
Yeah.
Is, oh my God, thank you for getting back to me. I never hear from other companies.
Yeah.
So I think as employers, we need to hear that and we need to act on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are hearing that over and over again. And to think of it not just as somebody that we're hiring, where we're looking to hire someone, but that they may be our future customer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have family members and friends that if they never hear anything back from us, they're going to have something negative out there in the community
exactly.
to
mm-hmm.
say about us, which is not going to help our business.
Mm-hmm.
No,
so I think it's important to acknowledge
mm-hmm.
that is what the applicants out there, how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, the problem is businesses have spent thousands of dollars on automated applicant tracking systems, which are imperfect.
Right.
And if a person applies for the wrong job, they automatically get a reject.
Right.
And part of that is that they're not particularly user-friendly, but a company spent a lot of money putting them in. Mm.
So
we would be well qualified for that position, but because of one little line on their resume,
interesting.
So is the solution then to refine that software so that doesn't happen, that somebody gets kicked into some sort of intermediary place so you can, I don't know, an actual human can look at that and see? I mean,
I think every business has to look at it differently.
Right.
I don't automatically respond to anyone. I look at everybody's. And yes, it's very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are larger businesses that they have employees that's all they do.
Right,
right,
right.
Is open them and look. So
right.
Every business has to look at it differently and what
right.
are their resources. But I don't think we can solve the problem in this room about the resources, but I think it's important to hear the applicants don't like not hearing that.
Right,
right,
yeah.
right.
Right. Last call for questions? No? Will you please join me in thanking our panelists this morning? Stay tuned for future business breakfast forums. Come next year, we're hoping to expand these. So check our website for updates. And thank you all for being
thank you.
Here.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You could stay.